contribution to the Common School Fund that helps fund education for Oregon's children. The sign-up sheets are on the left-hand side of the room here. Some folks are a little confused. If you are opposed to the development in proposal as it references Senate Bill 30, you would want to check that you are for the bill because you would be opposed to development. So with that in mind, please remember how you check it off because I'll be calling people up separately. Let me tell you that there's an overflow room in the orientation room over by the visitor's kiosk. So if you're not able to get in here just now, you can visit and watch us do our things in action in the overflow room. Oh, we also have live internet anywhere in the Capitol, so you can tune us in there. I think with that, let me just state how we're going to run this committee today. We have 2 hours. Now we have an hour and 55 minutes. We're going to hear Senate Bill 989 first. It has 15 minutes scheduled for it, no more, maybe a little less. Senate Bill 30 will have the remainder of the time. I'll be hearing from the two senators on that bill for about 10 minutes. We'll hear from the Water Resources Department. Then I will hear from the county for about 15 minutes. Then I'll hear from the proponents of the two developments for 15 minutes each, and then I will have public testimony. So we hope to have as much time for public testimony as possible. Okay, so I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 989. Ms. Richardson, please tell us what's going on here.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 989 exempts the individual self-insured public body program from the insurance code if annual contributions to the program aggregate at least $500,000 annually. This would not include school districts, community college districts, or community college service districts.
Okay, we've got some folks here from Coos Bay to testify. Okay, Mr. Salisbury, and was there someone that you wanted to testify with you? I like to bring people up three at a time. Okay, I'll let you go first, and then I'll start after that.
Chairperson Walker and the committee members, thank you for hearing this. I'm Timothy Salisbury. I'm the CFO at Bay Area Hospital, or Bay Area Health District, down in Coos Bay, Oregon. And I just wanted to, I have like a little bit of a handout here. I'll give that to you. I'm going to make sure I keep one myself. Thank you. I just quickly wanted to give you a brief history. Bay Area Health District was formed way back in the 50s. The hospital was built in 74. Currently, we're a licensed 172-bed hospital. We operate 130 beds. We're the largest health district or hospital health district hospital in the state of Oregon. We have annual operating expenses of $100 million, and we have about $50 million in reserves in the bank as funded depreciation. So we're a large business. Even though we're a health district, we actually operate as a community hospital. Excuse me. About 10, 12 years ago, our pension and health attorney told us that we were in violation of this regulation. And the way that came about is we had over 1,100 employees, and about 1995-96, one of our big unions took off, and their health insurance was covered under the union plan. So we had 450 people leave our plan to go to the union plan. And we were not aware of this legislation, so we scrambled to say, what can we do? And what we did is we got a partner, the Coos Bay North Bend Water Board, which is a small district that have like 38 employees. They joined us so that we would fall under C, the joint program, which is 500 employees, I believe. excuse me. The joint program is 1,000 employees or 500,000 in expenses. We wanted to get the law changed. We don't believe that this law was intended to apply for health districts as much as probably the city, counties, things like that. And we kind of fall under B if we wanted to do it alone, which would be 500 employees only. Well, we have about 410 employees or so on our health plan now. So we do not meet the criteria alone, but we do right now under C, the joint program. The problem becomes, as we just received notice last week, actually, that the Water Board, since there are 38 employees, they're going to go on another health plan at the end of this year. And so that would leave us, under the current law, to have to close our health plan down that we've operated well over 20 years. Two of the unions that are in our health plan, we have a benefits committee made up of the union folks and the hospital folks. We oversee the plan. We're large enough to take the risk. We do not want to have to close that down and go scrambling to buy insurance for our employees. So we would like to somehow come up with a way that the Bay Area Health District could fall into one of these categories. And one suggestion we have in the SB would be to, excuse me, I caught this throat thing a couple weeks ago, and I can't seem to get rid of it.
Oh, we're all familiar with that on this committee.
In Oregon, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, let's adjourn. During the hearing, Madam Chair.
Anyways, we would like to add the language that we see under C to B, that would be 500 employees or 500,000 in program contributions. That 500,000 may be a little bit low if you look at it in a business sense and a risk sense. That perhaps that should be $1 million or $2 million. Our health plan pays $4 million. We're a large plan. We have a very good plan for our employees: health, dental, vision, the full array of benefits. But probably something that would be more reasonable would be, you know, $1 to $2 million, something in that range. But we just don't want to have to close our plan down. It took a long time with the unions, with our benefits committee, to develop this. Every couple of years we tweak it. We add drug coverage, we change this, we change that, and we got a really good working relationship, and we'd hate to have to go out on the market and try to buy insurance right now to duplicate a plan that we have. We tried a couple of years ago during union negotiations, and there wasn't one available, and the union was really upset because the benefits were not as good as what we had currently. So if there's any way that we could change this, update it, so that you take into consideration, health districts, large health districts, that would be fantastic. I'd appreciate that.
Okay. Questions from the committee? I've spoken with Senator Berger about this, and I just want you to know I'm a Coastie, and I graduated high school in Reedsport, and my mother lives in Charleston, so she has used your facility many times. Thank you very much for providing good health care.
Well, thank you. Hope we had good outcomes.
Yes, both my mother and stepfather are doing just fine. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, we have Lori Hancock, who wanted to testify in support of the bill. Is Lori... You signed on the wrong one. I thought that might have been the case. Okay, so we have some folks against, and I'm not sure. Did you do the same thing, Steve Pfeiffer and James Curie?
James
Kane. Oh, James, you signed on the wrong one, too? Mm. Well, that makes this hearing go much quicker. Mark Doderman? Okay. Did you re-sign, all of you who signed on the wrong list, did you sign up on the right list? Because you did not? All right, I'll have my staff shift you over.
I'm glad, Madam Chair, that we, in our Educational Excellence School Improvement Fund, we added more money for reading skills.
Yeah, Senator, I think we could use a few.
It's not just reading, it's comprehension as well.
More testifiers, Madam Chair. I'm sure some people would volunteer.
I'm sure they would. Let's be nice to our guests. Okay, well, we do have someone from the insurance division who I know didn't sign up on the wrong sheet. So, Carl Lundberg, could you come up, please? And then that will be the final person that signed up for this hearing.
Excuse me. Representative Maurer is one of the sponsors of the bill.
Well, he's not signed up, and I didn't see him.
Oh.
Representative Maurer, excuse me, come on up.
No,
you come up, please.
You're on the hook now.
That's all right.
Yep. You can go before the insurance division.
Never before the insurance division.
You need to come up and let the chair know you're
yes.
in the room.
Sorry about that, Senator.
That's okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Ron Maurer, serving House District 3 in Grants Pass, Josephine County, and I'm here as a sponsor, a co-sponsor of Senate Bill 989. There's also a companion bill in the House 2495. And as you see the bill today, we would suggest several amendments. And some of those amendments would be to reduce the number of employees in line 26 from 1,000 to 250, and I have kind of done some hand gross amendments that you have a copy of, I believe. And also, we would consider changing the $500,000 to $2 million. That probably is a more reasonable amount, and I'm sure the insurance division will have comments on that. And I also believe you were given a copy of this, although we do not have a color copy.
But
we have a black and white. And this is information about cities in the state that are self-insured. And it gives the number of employees and annual medical premiums for those number of employees.
Okay.
And we believe that a 250 employee number or a $2 million annual aggregate contribution would probably be more appropriate. And I'm very interested to hear what the insurance division is. Let me give you a little history on where this language came from, the $500,000. That was originally put into statute in 1981, and the $500,000 may have been appropriate in 1981, but in 2007 would not be appropriate. And so I would suggest at minimum raising that level. The reason I'm interested in self-insurance is I believe self-insurance for public bodies is a way to help control health care costs. You gain efficiencies in large bodies through administrative efficiencies, but one thing that you lose is that you lose people's self-interest in their overutilization or appropriate utilization of healthcare services. And a smaller pool puts people into more of an ownership of utilization of services. And so I think that you'll find that most of these small self-insured pools, that their utilization rates are probably a little lower than extremely large groups because they work together through wellness programs, through maybe some peer pressure, but also maintenance of chronic illnesses. And I will leave it at that, and I'm very interested to hear what the insurance division has to say.
Okay. Well, before I turn to them, I need to ask you one question.
Yes, ma'am.
What's going on with your House bill?
The House bill is right now, it's in Representative Buckley's Education Committee, and it's waiting to see what happens with Senate Bill 989. Mm-hmm. One of the issues was school districts and how Senate Bill 426 and the outcome of Senate Bill 426 and that there is some language in Senate Bill 426 that essentially you can drive a bus through. Section 17, I believe, maybe it's 14, says that any school district that was self-insured prior to January 1st of 2007 can maintain that self-insurance pool. Well, the intent may have been the day before January 1st, 2007, but the language is very explicit. So if a school district was ever self-insured, then a school district could revert back to a self-insurance pool under Senate Bill 426. Notwithstanding, at some point in the future, they would have to meet the large pool requirements of similar benefits and lower cost. So they you've got four self-insured school districts right now: Clackamas, I think it's Clackamas, Portland, Ashland, and Medford. Could be wrong on Clackamas. And those school districts at some point in the future will have to meet requirements of the larger statewide pool. Otherwise, they will be brought in to that statewide pool.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Carl Lundberg. I'm the Deputy Insurance Administrator for the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And I'd like to express some concerns about Senate Bill 989, which would allow public bodies to self-insure with annual contributions to their health insurance program in the amount of at least $500,000. currently, the law allows a program if it covers at least 500 employees and retired employees. And for two or more public bodies to jointly self-insure, they have to have a program that has 1,000 employees and retired employees or annual contributions in the aggregate of at least $500,000. Our actuaries have told us that a $500,000 annual contribution would provide health benefits for about 50 employees. And that's too small of a group, in our opinion, to be successfully self-insured. While we haven't got any information on why the legislature established the $500,000 standard in 1981, it could be because the costs were less. It is substantially lower than the $2 million that reserve levels that are required for an insurer. If we are any changes to be considered, we recommend that the change be that both the $500,000 be increased in both sections of the law as it extends to individual public bodies. We believe that allowing public bodies to self-insure with $500,000 in annual premiums creates a substantial financial risk for those entities, which would then, of course, harm Oregonians. While there's really no magic number at which we can say self-insurance is financially sound, from an actuarial perspective, self-insurance becomes less of a financial risk, according to the group size, for two reasons. First, there's a strong correlation in the claims volatility and the group size, with claims costs becoming more stable and predictable as the group size increases. As a result, smaller groups generally pay more per capita than larger groups for reinsurance and have proportionately higher reserving requirements. Secondly, the actuarial, administrative, and other fixed costs associated with self-insurance are more of a burden for smaller groups since they have to be spread over a smaller number of people. If you have any questions, I wanted to keep it short. But
okay, great.
We
thank
are concerned
you.
About the solvency issues that these small groups
I had that same concern myself, so I appreciate that. Representative.
Yeah.
We were representatives
yeah,
once.
We were
yeah.
Long, in another life. A couple questions. Well, one question and then a request. As I'm understanding what you're saying, the dollar amount is more significant than the numbers of people. And I guess what I'm wanting is a response from you to the suggested changes Representative Maurer put on the table of dropping to 250 individuals but increasing the cap to $2
million. Well, we think that the number should stay at 500. We don't really think that going lower than 500 is a good thing, but we can't say that going to 499 or 450, we can't give you a precise number. But in terms, insurance is predicated on spreading the risk. And so the larger the group, the more viable it is. And the smaller the group, the more difficult it has to survive. And so we know that 500 is, in our opinion, is a safe number to ensure the success of the group, and for that reason we don't really want to see the group size reduced below 500. We would prefer that it would stay that high, but we can't tell you as a matter of actuarial science that if you reduce that number that it's going to fail. We just know that it's got a lot more difficulty of surviving. Insurance companies, in order to go out and offer insurance, have to have $2,500,000 of reserves. This is talking only about the cash flow. And the cash flow at $500,000 would represent roughly 50 individuals. A $2,500,000 cash flow still doesn't talk about the reserves. And so
We think that the number of 500 is probably a better number.
Senator has a follow-up question.
Yeah, well, not necessarily a question, because I think it might help inform me on the issue, this list that Representative Maurer gave us. Would it be possible for us to discover what the reinsurance costs for these self-insured groups are? Do you have that sort of data?
Chair Walker, I don't think we have that kind of information.
Okay. Well, that's certainly... Well, I mean, you know, the reinsurance is the way you deal with risk, and it'd be interesting to know, as you get smaller, how much more the premium for reinsurance is, just based on the numbers. We're trying to decide what numbers actually truly work here. So,
thank you.
Senator Walker, Senator Cruz. The issue here about the numbers, I think it is relevant that we'd reduce the numbers. Currently, as the law is written, public bodies can game the system. All they have to do is, theoretically, all they have to do is have two public entities. Public entity can be any number of people. And you could have 10 people in a public entity and one person in another public entity, and they combine, and if they had $500,000 in annual contributions, they could self-insure under the law as it's written today. So clearly the law needs to be updated. And I believe that a number substantially less than 500 is more than adequate for a self-insurance pool, but it is, in my understanding, under rule in the insurance division, that reinsurance is a requirement and reserves are a requirement, and that reserve requirement is substantial. But again, the potential benefit to the public body, I would think, outweighs any concern for keeping that number at 500.
All right, thank you. Senator Metzger has a question, and then we'll need to close down the hearing.
Well, I think more of an observation, and if there was a response, that would be good. I just think that from what we've heard today, Madam Chair, I think we're dealing with a couple of issues. I know in business where we deal primarily with insurance issues there, these are very complex issues. And what Representative Maurer is talking about in different groups and public bodies, and what is the appropriate amount? I mean, that's one issue. The other issue we have, and I suspect because of the two people on the bill, that probably is very focused, at least originally, on the area that we have with Bay Area Health, which has an existing program, you know, and according to their testimony, $50 million in reserves and working well, and that they're going out of that system into an open market, as they have explored, as actually going to cost them more money. You know, so I think one way we could look at this is separating those issues. I think that they're in a situation in which the statute is catching them in their dynamic, but their dynamic seems to be working. And I would be really, really inclined to provide some relief for this specific organization, that whether or not they could be allowed to continue independent, maybe the broader discussion of all public bodies and what the insurance rate should be, because I think it would be you know, wise for us to think about a program that's been operating for over two decades, has lots of reserves, and has management and union people wanting to participate in a health plan that is working, and failure not to allow them to continue just because of the circumstance with their water board. I would want to make sure that the larger discussion didn't perhaps preclude the testimony we heard today, which I thought was pretty compelling, that they should be allowed to continue. So, you know, as you consider this, I wouldn't want one to outdo the other, I guess.
Thank you, Senator. That's a really good point, and I agree with you. I think there are some concerns that I know I have and some members of the committee have expressed about expanding this out a little bit further. So we're not going to move into work session on this bill today, and I appreciate you coming over.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 989, and we will have further discussions about that bill before we bring it back.
I can tell by the comment.
Yeah. Okay, we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 30. Ms. Richardson, why don't you tell us what this bill is about while Senators Westland and Johnson approach the dais.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 30 prohibits destination resort siting within 3 miles of the Natolias River Basin. It applies to lands mapped as eligible for destination resort siting on or after December 25th, 2006. It declares an emergency and would take effect upon passage.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning, Senator. Good to see you.
Gee, happy to be here. For the record, Senator Ben Westland, District 27, and thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing this important bill. Today, we are going to hear voluminous, copious quantities of testimony on both sides of this issue. As you listen, both to the proponents and opponents, the hydrologists, the developers, fly fishers, community residents, county commissioners, citizens. The most important question, the only question really, is do you believe that one of the most special and unique places in Oregon, indeed all of America, deserves special and unique protection? It's not a question of whether there's enough water or not, or whether flora and fauna will be harmed. Those are certainly critical questions, of course. It's also not a question of whether one of these proposals is a different kind of destination resort, or how small or unimaginably large the other may be. This is only really a question of place. This very special place, a question of protecting the headwaters of the Metolius and the magnificence of its resulting river. Today, I am not here to cast aspersions as to the county's land use planning process that produced these destination resort overlays. Rightly or wrongly, that's their process. But I do find it deliciously ironic that one of their off-sided criticisms of this bill is that the state is trying to circumvent their land use planning process. When only a few, very few short years ago, Jefferson County was literally begging the state to circumvent their land use planning in order to expedite and ensure the siting of another type of much-desired high-density destination. Now, granted, a prison, of course, isn't much of a resort. But when this same body deemed it to be in the state's interest to expedite prison siting in direct conflict with their local zoning, land use, and planning procedures, Jefferson County was happy to accede. Madam Chair, members of the committee, it is my heartfelt belief an assertion this morning that today it is in the state's interest to protect this special and unique place for what it is today for all of us, not for what a few think it should become. This is not a land use fight over some chunk of sagebrush or even some Class A farm ground. This is the Metolius River Basin and her headwaters, as long on history as it is rich in natural heritage. This is Oregon, and if there is one place that defines us, it is this place. The Metolius is not just a jewel in Jefferson County's crown. It is a treasure for all of us, an Oregon treasure. You know, years ago, Paul McCartney famously penned these lines. There are places I remember. Some are gone, but some remain. This is one of those places that must always remain. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. That was very poetic. I appreciate it. Senator Johnson, welcome.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson.
colleagues, up front I'm going to ask for your forbearance. This is going to be exceedingly challenging testimony for me to deliver. Obviously today I'm thinking of my mother, a fierce defender of Camp Sherman until literally the day she died 4 months ago. There is no place on earth dearer to my heart than the Metolius. I grew up there. My parents are buried there. I find renewal and comfort beneath the cathedral pines along the river. I believe I share this profound connection with thousands of other Oregonians who hold this special, precious, fragile, almost sacred place with the same deep affection I do. The 160 acres of forested land that encircle the headwaters of the Metolius have been in Johnson family ownership since 1904, when my grandfather purchased them as part of his timber holdings in the Sisters, Green Ridge, Camp Sherman area. My father, the late Sam Johnson, owned them from 1925 until his death in 1984. My mother inherited them from his estate, and I bought them from her in 1993. When Sam and my mother realized in 1957 that they could not move a road that passed over the main Metolius Springs at the viewpoint, and that they could no longer protect that fragile area from the increasing numbers of visitors, campers, buses, and cars without help, they launched an effort to give away the viewpoint and part of the roadway to the United States Department of Agriculture, the Forest Service. Those efforts took 10 years to complete and resulted not only in the outright donation of land, but also in the contribution of a scenic easement over land on the other side of the springs and across the meadow vista so familiar to Oregonians. The donation cost my parents thousands of dollars. The gift was so significant that the Secretary of Agriculture received it on behalf of the American people. During all this time, my family worked as a partner with the USFS, the Sisters Ranger District, the State Forestry Department, the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs, ODF&W, environmental groups, Jefferson County, and the Camp Sherman community to maintain this place in as natural a state as possible and to protect the forest from fire, vandalism, disease, and degradation. When the United States Senate Bill 2148, the Omnibus Wild and Scenic Rivers Act of 1988, was passed, the attached amendments describing the portion of the Metolius River to be designated as a scenic and wild river acknowledged the, quote, unique public-private partnership that has developed over nearly 70 years, and, quote, the sound stewardship and land management that should serve as a model for the type of management that can be achieved on even the most fragile and vulnerable environment. That fragile and vulnerable environment is why I am so supportive and appreciative of Senator Westland's Senate Bill 30. You will hear from many people today, more eloquent than I, about the spiritual beauty and special character of the Metolius Basin, so I will confine my remarks to just a few. First, I'm sad the tone of the debate has turned mean-spirited and turned into an attack on character and motives. To have one of the proponents of one of the destination resorts, a friend of my late parents, question my integrity on this issue cuts like a knife. People can disagree on principle, but character assassination debases the debate. Likewise, on previous occasions, my family has stood shoulder to shoulder with one of the other potential developers' families on protection issues regarding the use of the river. For him to attack Senator Westland's motives and demean Ben's character with editorial boards is uncalled for. There was an occasion when my mother and the late Tony Foster were involved with the planned Little Butt timber sale, which would have cut marked old-growth ponderosa pines in a strip 2 miles wide and 9 miles long along the Metolius River itself. As pitched as the battle became, no one resorted to name-calling. The sale was successfully derailed after more than 2 years of planned impact investigations and multi-agency participation. A compromise was worked out. We, too, taking a page from Tony's playbook, can find common ground without belittling each other. Secondly, this hearing is early in the bill's life. Opportunities exist to negotiate and accommodate a variety of concerns. To characterize this bill as partisan, West Side Oregon versus East Side Oregon, and not in my backyard legislation is simply wrong. We can work as Oregonians to protect not just some river in Central Oregon, but to protect a transcendent Oregon treasure, one of those handfuls of places in this state that are so special, so unique, so fragile, so irreplaceable that they cry out for special protection. I am willing to work towards some solution that still protects the Metolius Basin's water, its character, its ecology, and its beauty, yet potentially accommodate some light footprint in other areas. Finally, I feel compelled to respond to a recent vitriolic editorial. I have been accused in the press of a conflict of interest regarding this bill. I thoroughly reject that characterization. My family so loved the Metolius, they gave it away to protect it. I do plead guilty to an emotional response to the bill. I see Senate Bill 30 as an attempt to neutralize what I consider to be an error in judgment made by Jefferson County officials who have not been sympathetic to Camp Sherman's longstanding attempt to protect this unique community environment and environment. They had other options, but they sought to concentrate development near this fragile place. And, colleagues, I do plead guilty to honoring my parents' memory and the legacy they gave to the legacy of the gift they gave to Oregon. The Bend Bulletin, in their grievously harsh editorial, says that these folks, referring to Senator Westland and me, would like you to believe that they are really up to something noble. Don't believe it. I do consider my effort in this matter to be, in fact, noble, in the truest sense of the word. And I am sure that my parents would consider this my finest moment. Please give this bill your consideration and support.
Thank you very much, Senator Johnson. And I so appreciated the history that you've provided us. If you can provide us with your written testimony, because I'm really appreciative of history of Oregon and the value of it, and especially the value that your parents have provided and your grandparents. And thank you again for also pointing out the vitriolic and snarky comments of one editorial board. I have found that editorial board really does a lot of that, and they need to get off their throne and get out here in Oregon and see how Oregonians really live. And I don't mind saying that on the record because I've dealt with this issue before. Not this issue, but the way this editorial board behaves. So I'm sorry that you've been attacked in the press. We won't have any of that in here. I'll gavel anyone down who turns this into some kind of a character assassination, because we can have public, open, and intelligent and adult-like discourse on this bill, and you know there's some controversy surrounding it.
I do, Madam Chair.
And I do appreciate that you're willing to take a look at some compromises and some amendments.
Thank you for your courtesy in hearing the bill.
Any other comments from the committee? Thank you both. I appreciate it. Senator Wesson, we'll see you back up here. And Senator Johnson, I'm sure you have other duties?
I may well from my committee. Madam Chair, with your permission, I have some photographs here that for people on the panel who may not be familiar with the Metolius might be useful.
That would be great, because I, for one, am not as familiar as you. The coast has been my sanctuary. The ocean is where I go to find that spiritual peace, but I do know that others have enjoyed the Metolius, and I hope to see that up close and personal with your photos. Thank you. I'd like to now hear from two folks from the Water Resources Department, and then we'll go to the county commissioners, Barry Norris and Ken Light.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Barry Norris. I'm an engineer, and I work at Oregon Water Resources Department. And with me this morning is Ken Light, who's a groundwater geologist and also works at the department. Recently, there was a quote that was printed in the Bend Bulletin, the local paper over in Deschutes County, that quoted one of our employees referring to the effects that use of new groundwater rights may have on the Metolius River. And so, as a result, we wanted to try to clarify that issue and avert some of the confusion that may have resulted from that comment. And so our director corresponded with Senator Westman's office on that issue.
Okay, we appreciate that, because we don't like false information being out there.
And so, as a result, our director, Phil Ward, wrote Senator Westland, and let me just say that let me summarize portions of the letter and what we said in that letter. And one of the things we made very clear is that new consumptive uses of groundwater deplete surface water in the Deschutes Basin, and surface water in the Deschutes Basin is already fully appropriated to users. Another issue or another point that we made in the letter was that use of groundwater in the vicinity of the Motolias River, as an example of new water uses contemplated under the mitigation requirements imposed in the Deschutes Basin, ultimately the consumptive portion of any new groundwater use will deplete surface water. And so we just wanted to make that very clear that there is an effect, primary effect in some areas. We've divided the basin into what we call zones of impact. And that's for administrative purposes so that it's manageable and it gives people certainty as to contemplated new uses of groundwater. So we do require mitigation for those direct zones of impact, but that does not mean there aren't secondary impacts to other groundwater, surface water in the basin. So with that, I'd like to introduce and invite Ken Light to more fully explain some of the groundwater science in the area and kind of give you a little bit of background on how groundwater uses impact surface water.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Light?
Chair Walker, committee, my name for the record, my name is Ken Light. I'm a hydrogeologist with the Oregon Water Resources Department. I'm also a co-principal investigator of a multi-year joint U.S. Geological Survey, Oregon Water Resources Department study of the groundwater flow system in the Upper Deschutes Basin. Today I'm here to briefly give you a context in which to hear some other testimony, mm-hmm. briefly explain a little bit of the hydrology, the groundwater flow system, where the water comes from, where it's going, and remark on how pumping potentially impacts the groundwater flow system. And I'd like to, I'm not sure if the graphic we have up here is turned enough for...
I can't see it.
...for you all to see.
Let me get that.
Okay. That'll work.
All right. What this graphic shows... outlines here is the outline of the USGS OWRD study, and it's some 4,500 square miles, so it's a large area. It's the entire upper part of the Deschutes Basin above Warm Springs, which is here to the north. The western boundary of the study area is the crest of the High Cascades, and on the east side, the boundary is just east of Prineville. And the north end is Madras right here. So the north end is about Trout Creek and the confluence with the Deschutes River. A couple of the salient features here just quickly. This is Lake Billy Chinook, the three arms, the Crooked River, the Deschutes River, and the Motolias River. This is the Motolias River subbasin right up in here. And then far south, this is the Lapine area. Just for geographic reference, this is Newberry Volcano down here. And Highway 58 coming from Eugene down to Highway 97 comes through right about here. All right, the hydrologic features I want to briefly point out on this graphic is these lines that you see coming across are essentially contour lines of the top of the water table. And these blue arrows here indicate the principal directions of flow. Let me just explain briefly. And that is most of the recharge, most of the water that drives or gets into the groundwater flow system occurs as precipitation just where you'd expect it to, up in the High Cascades. So that really forms the shape of the water table. The other thing in this particular basin that affects the direction of groundwater flow and where it ultimately discharges, and groundwater, a surface manifestation of groundwater, in other words, where it discharges, are springs. Springs are just no more than just where the surface topography intersects the water table. That's why we have springs.
And doesn't the Motolias River come from springs? Isn't that the whole basis of that river?
Yes. Yes, it is. And the other in this basin, the other feature, big feature that affects groundwater flow, is along the eastern edge of the basin. The rocks have very low permeability. In other words, water cannot pass through those rocks very readily like they can in the rest of the basin. And essentially that older rock forms a rampart that directs groundwater flow to discharge, and a fair amount of water discharges in the Lake Billy Chinook area and above. And just as an example, the Crooked River, from about where Highway 97 crosses the Crooked River at the new Rex Barber Bridge, down to Opal Springs, the Crooked River or groundwater discharges at a rate of about 1,100 cubic feet per second. Okay, for reference, 1 cubic foot per second is equal to about 450 gallons per minute. Now, to reference 450 gallons per minute, if one were to turn their spigot on their hose and their garden hose on full tilt, that would be about 10 gallons per minute. Okay, so 1 cubic foot per second equals 450 gallons per minute. The discharge here in the Crooked River is about 1,100 cubic feet per second.
Oh, my.
So a lot of water. All right. Another point that discharges is the Deschutes River below a place called Lower Bridge down to Lake Billy Chinook. That's about 450 cubic feet per second. Another large area, several hundred cubic feet per second, is in the southern part of the basin around Crane Prairie and Wickiup Reservoirs. And finally, the area of our interest here today, the Metolius drainage discharges a little over 900 cubic feet per second of groundwater out of springs. The headwaters themselves are relatively small at 125 cubic feet per second, but still, in most parts of the state, that's a huge amount of water, but in the Deschutes Basin, it's 120 is a medium-sized spring. So the groundwater is recharging in the Cascades, and it's flowing down gradient. You think of these lines here as lines of potential, kind of like high pressure and low pressure with the wind, and the wind will flow from high potential, low potential. Well, it's the same with groundwater. It's flowing under gravity. That's its driving force. So from its recharge area, which mounds up in the Cascades, it flows down to various discharge areas. And finally, when you get a closer, if you have an opportunity to get a closer look at this, the blue lines represent, or the blue reaches of streams in here, all through the Metolius and down in here, represent reaches, segments of the stream where groundwater is discharging to the streams. The red, and there's only a couple here, represent where water is actually flowing out of the streams and into the groundwater system. And about we lose about 100 cubic feet per second out of the Deschutes River into the groundwater system here. But by and large, the most of the basin, it's groundwater discharging to surface water. To the point where we find that 85% of the flow in the Deschutes River below Madras, at Warm Springs, is actually derived from groundwater. So groundwater drives the surface water system throughout the Deschutes Basin. And nearly 100% of surface water in the Metolius Basin is groundwater derived from springs. The final point I will make is these arrows represent a steady state or sort of a natural surface of the water. When one puts a well in or wells in, that tends to perturb or modify that surface. So for instance, if a well is put in, say, here, for example, then the impacts of that well will go all directions. And the maximum direction that it'll go, of course, depends on the local geology, the local geometry of the flow system. And I think, oh, well, and then finally, so So if a well goes in here, the impacts will show up here, and the impacts will show up down here. They will go out to every boundary to the flow system. And those boundaries, one of those type of boundary are springs. So I think I will just stop at that.
That's a great explanation. I appreciate that. Do we have some questions or comments from the committee about that? So, Mr. Light, then if a development was to go into this area, they'd have to drill wells, correct?
I believe that's the proposal.
Okay, so drilling wells will take groundwater and alter what you've just shown us here on the map.
Right. Would Chair Walker, it would... These are 200-foot contours, so
okay.
you wouldn't see much alteration to this. It takes a lot of this, but this is just a generalized map. But yes, the surface of the groundwater will be modified by groundwater pumping.
Okay. Do you have this study on the internet somewhere where people can go and look at it?
Yes, all our reports, Chair Walker, all of our reports are at the U.S. Geological Survey's Oregon District web page, and we can provide that a web link.
Okay. Can you state it into the record so people who are listening can go onto their computers? Should they just Google something and get to where they need to be?
Yes. Chair Walker, I'd recommend that they Google the Oregon Water or the Oregon Water Science Center of the U.S. Geological Survey.
Okay.
And within their website, they will have a list of studies in Oregon, and on that list is the Upper Deschutes Groundwater Study Area.
Okay.
And there's lots of information in there.
Terrific. That will give folks another place to turn. And Senator Morse has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill singles out the Metolius Basin. And if, in fact, the Lower Deschutes water is fully appropriated, as you've indicated, why is this bill just focused on the Metolius Basin? And wouldn't it make sense to just expand this ban to the entire Deschutes Basin, including Crooked River and all of Deschutes County?
Madam Chair? Senator Morris, we have a process in place. The Oregon Water Resources Department has a process in place for allowing new groundwater uses when they are fully mitigated and as to the zone of impact. In one of the zones of impact is the Metolius Basin. If you move outside of that basin, the area where we would require mitigation would be likely in the Lower Deschutes, so that they could mitigate for their consumptive use into the Lower Deschutes. As I described earlier, that would be the primary area of impact. However, we will say that there are secondary impacts that can occur from that pumping, such as the headwaters or the Metolius River, that wouldn't receive that impact. So it would comply with the requirements we have in place for mitigation to surface water in the Deschutes Basin if, for instance, the mitigation occurred in the Lower Deschutes. But there may be some type of a higher level of protection that is a policy issue that perhaps the legislature or others may want to consider, and I would imagine that's the reason for the bill.
But as a follow-up, Madam Chair, what is possible then for all other sites outside of this basin? They would have the opportunity to mitigate, but this bill would foreclose any opportunity to mitigate within the Metolius Basin.
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, I'm not that familiar with the bill, the specifics of the bill, so I don't know if that would exclude any new groundwater uses in this area or not. I just can't speak to that.
Well, Madam Chair, what I'm speaking to is the inconsistency of applying a standard to a certain area within this broad Deschutes Basin that is unique and not applied to the rest of the basin.
Okay. I don't think he's looking for a comment from you or answer from you. That was an editorial comment. All right, gentlemen, I don't see any more questions. Thank you both for coming. We appreciated the lesson in science, geology, and geography. Okay, now we will hear from Representative Dahlem, Jeff Rasmussen, and Commissioner Hatfield. And if you have written testimony, please provide it to our assistant, Ms. Gravel, but don't read it. Just summarize it. That will help things go along further and will help us listen to you more closely. Thank you. Representative Dahlem, do you want to go first?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Walker and members of the Senate Education and General Government Committee. For the record, John Dahlem, Representative House District 59. And I'd like to thank the chair and the committee for their patience. I was a co-signer to Senate Bill 30, and I feel an obligation to explain to you why I had my name removed from the bill. And I would say that I had, as circumstances unfolded, I really wanted to know what was going on with this bill. I think my intentions were good, but when I get into the bill, we have... When I do legislation, I look at three things. If the case is tough, and one is justice, equity, and due process. And when I say justice, I'm looking at fairness. Is this bill fair? Well, and in my mind, it is not, because the commissioners from Jefferson County, the population of Jefferson County, has wrestled with a very difficult problem. And they have received much the same testimony you're receiving. They have had numbers, as I look around the room, perhaps as large as you have had today. They have meetings, and you'll get the exact number of meetings they've had. But I know it's in excess of a dozen. So they have combed this process. And so when I talk about fairness for the legislature, which certainly has the authority to step in, and we use the word mitigation, and to circumvent their process, to me, denies them a fairness to let the process run its course. The other concern I have is justice. The people of Jefferson County and all of them have been engaged in this. In fact, the system that we have in place allows for them, if they feel that the process has excluded them, if they feel the process has omitted major facts, or if they feel that the process has been turned around, there is a way for anybody in that community to register a complaint, and in fact they have. We are on our way with this claim. It is in process of being worked right now, and it has not finished. The appeal process has not been completely exhausted, and we have due process that is available. When I looked at those three things, this justice, equity, has everybody been treated fairly? I think that Jefferson County has made an attempt to do that. And they'll certainly had some influence on a major decision. And probably I don't have to talk to any of you about, and perhaps I'm talking to the people behind me. When you remove your name from a bill, that's a major consideration. It's not something done lightly. But the kicker for me was I called out to the Warm Springs people because I was very concerned. I represent them. And there are personal friends there, just as there are in Madras and in the entire whole of Jefferson County. When I stepped out of this committee room, I believe, no, down one, C, and signed on to the bill in the 11th hour, I was under the impression that the Warm Springs people had a religious connection to the Metolius. And I was not very interested in stepping on the religious rights of anyone. And as a result, signed the bill. As I called to the Warm Springs Reservation, to people out there I trust, and that I talked to their natural resource director. And he told me that the council had not considered this yet, that they were going to consider it, and I believe it was last Tuesday, but please don't hold me tight to the date. And they did have their council meeting, and because of the high-profile nature of this issue, and because of the responsibility that we all take for the groups we represent, after Tuesday I called out, and the council had said that they would review the site. They have not done that yet. Without this action by those people, I felt I had to remove my name. The next place I went that was major in my determination to withdraw support was Legislative Council. And I called not once, not twice, but three times. And again, I'm preaching to the choir. I may be talking more to the people behind me than I am to you, Madam Chair, and the rest of the committee. Legislative Council gives us lots of opinions, and we all know what that means. But on each of those three occasions, and on one occasion, they called back and said that we could be committing a major 37 land claim. To be very specific, the present statute says that if a government, and in this case we could say the state, restricts land use activity, the owner of the property can be paid just compensation. Senate Bill 30, if passed into law, could be, and according to the people I talked to in Legislative Council, would be starting this claim process. Now, because of those reasons, one, justice, equity, and due process, a 37 land claim, and I fully expect the people of the Warm Springs, if they have strong feelings, they're here today. I have not seen any of my friends from the reservation, but if they're here today and they have strong feelings, they will be in this dais too and explain to you. But for those reasons, I withdrew my name, and I would respectfully ask that you table this bill. We can come back. It's a long process. And let the process that the legislature established run its course. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Dahlem. You're welcome to stay while they testify, or if you have committee, you can leave now. Thank you. All right.
Question, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Representative Dahlem, you indicated that you signed on to the bill because you felt the Warm Springs had deeply religious and spiritual attachments to this land?
That was my understanding at the time I signed on.
Are you now saying you believe the Warm Springs do not have?
No, I'm saying that I could not verify that. And I, now let me explain the Senator, pardon, Madam Chair and Senator Westland. It was the 11th hour. It was our last day to drop bills. And the representative for the Warm Springs came by, knocked on the door, and I went out and explained to me I left there with the impression that there were religious ties to the Mendolis, and there may be. And in that case, I want on. That's a huge issue for those people. Then, I have some time to look at this. We had, I think, the drop dead day hour was 5 o'clock or something like that, and I was in committee 1 to 3, so this is 2:30, 2:45. I do not want to miss the opportunity to support those people if this is their issue. Now, as I come out of that committee and am able to, and the bill got dropped, and I am able to examine that, I cannot say whether it does or it doesn't. I can tell you that the Warm Springs people were going to review the issue in council. They were going to go out and tour the ground. And then they were going to get with me and let me know. None of that has happened. So I don't know whether it has religious significance or not. But the time that has evolved between signing and now would lead me to believe, I certainly don't want to imply that I understand that culture or their religion, but I can only go on my cultural competence. I know the things in my religion that are important to me. The length of time that's gone by, I'm wondering. And if they're here, I will leave that to them to clear up.
So if I could just clarify that long answer. I mean, do you this is yes, no, or I don't know?
I don't know the religious significance of the Metolius riverbed to the Warm Springs people.
Okay.
But short answer.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Dahlem. All right. I'd like to hear from County Commissioner John Hatfield.
Good morning, Chairman Walker and committee members. Thank you for letting me come and talk to you today. My name is John Hatfield. I'm a newly elected Jefferson County Commissioner. I'm here to represent the current commission and the Planning Committee for Jefferson County. I'm here to support the decisions made by the Jefferson County Planning Commission and the previous Jefferson County Planning Committee and the previous commission. The way I look at it is the state and the county are partners in delivering services to the citizens of Oregon. Local planning, land use planning, is one of those services. The state sets the land use process, the county follows it. In this case, it was followed to the letter. It was not done lightly. It was seven citizens from the county or on the Planning Commission. They held 10 formal hearings over a period of a year and a half, so it was not done in a short period of time and rammed through. There were other town meetings throughout the area, and two of the meetings were out at Camp Sherman. I want to emphasize the process as we did what we were supposed to do, the county did. One of the other issues is the county is facing loss, potential loss of timber funds. We are not one of the more wealthy counties in the state. We need supplemental income in the county to continue to provide adequate services. One of the reasons I believe that Camp Sherman were cited is because we are largely an agricultural community. We are not allowed to site resorts within 3 miles of EFU land, and there's a lot of EFU land in the county, which eliminates a lot of area for potential destination resorts. We feel that destinations resorts are a good future source of income to continue to provide services for the county. We realize there are people who disagree with the decisions that were made, and I want to reiterate what Representative Down said, is that they can and have, I think there's been at least 12 LUBA appeals filed, and we believe that is the area where this should be decided and without legislative interference. We, as a commission, represent the whole county. When issues come up, we need to decide, is this in the best interest of the whole county? And the commission has decided that it is, and we respectfully encourage you to table the bill or not pursue it. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Can I ask you a question before I hear from your administrator? How long have you been on the commission? You said newly elected. So were you elected in November?
Yes, 3 months.
So you were not part of the process?
No.
Why was one of the other commissioners not elected to come over here and talk to us who were involved in the process?
Two of the three commissioners are newly elected. The one that was in midterm is in Hawaii.
Convention?
Well, that's no excuse, Madam Chair.
Yeah. The word Hawaii sort of has a bad connotation
I know,
around here.
I realize that. Yeah. I'm on vacation, okay? Forget scratch. But it was long planned. I have talked to the Planning Commission. I have talked to him about it. I mean, that's where I developed. I've lived in the community since 1959. I'm not new to the area. My father-in-law was the judge 20 years ago, so I'm not...
You're not new to the area.
Not new
okay.
to the situation.
Did you participate in the planning process? Did
no.
you go to some of the meetings?
No. I've gone to some of the commission meetings in December before, and some of the land issues I have.
Mm. Okay.
Other land use issues.
Okay. Let's hear from your administrator. Did you have anything to add, sir?
Just slightly, Chair Walker. My name is Jeff Rasmus, and I'm the newly appointed county administrator as well. So apologize for that. But I would just like to clarify just or add to a few things is that the zoning ordinance in Jefferson County for destination resorts does address or requires to address affordable housing and also that we feel that Senate Bill 30, in short, is not fair and not right. We feel the process that the county went through is a legal process, and the due process of the LUBA appeal will allow opponents to address their concerns. Jefferson County does have a very low tax base. We have a very low income per capita. With the federal county school payments looking to go away, those are the dollars we use to provide roads and services to our county residents. We need in Jefferson County to diversify our economy and raise the property tax base to provide basic government services to our citizens. The road system in Jefferson County is in dire need of new revenue. Half of our roads are not paved. We do need a new source of income. Destination resorts have been a successful way for other rural communities to diversify their economy. Jefferson County followed the rules. Please let the due process take its course without legislative interference.
Okay, I have a question for you. I have a couple, but unfortunately, I don't think you're going to be able to answer them since you're new on the job also. Which is disturbing, but let me ask you, you said that the zoning ordinance is required to address affordable housing. You're not suggesting that these destination resorts are going to provide affordable housing, are you?
No, but as a component of any application, they must address affordable housing for the workers, the people that are going to
For the workers, not
yes.
For the existing people in the community, but for the workers they'll bring in with their resort.
Correct. That must be addressed in the application.
I see. Do you know, either of you know a little bit about what was mentioned in Senator Westland's testimony about some help the county wanted previously from the state about siting a prison there in your county?
I had no personal experience with it, but my own philosophy is I'm a big believer in local decision making and local control. So.
Well, I understand that, but right. Senator Westland alluded to the fact, and I don't know anything about this. I've asked him to write me a little history about it.
I'm doing it.
I'm asking you, did your county come to the state and ask for a waiver of some land use laws to have a prison sited in your community? Do you know?
I would defer to Mr. Morgan, who will be testifying later. He is former county administrator and is the city administrator for the city of Madras. And I know he was involved.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I don't mean any disrespect, but I would have appreciated if you had sent some folks who were directly involved in this decision-making so that I could have asked a few more questions. It's not your fault you're new on the job. I understand. Is this your fifth day on the job?
Yes.
Welcome. It's just I like to ask a lot of questions and get some more information. So maybe when your other commissioner gets back from vacation, I won't mention the word where it was. I just like a little more history than I was able to get. You did provide good testimony, but I just have some more questions. So
okay, we'd be happy to facilitate
all right.
that.
What
Thank
format
you.
would that be in?
Well, I would just like your vacationing commissioner to give my office a call so I can have a telephone call with them and ask a few more questions. And I just need to have some questions answered.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Now we're going to roll into hearing from the different developers. We're about right on time with the amount of time allocated. So 15 minutes. We're going to start with Dutch Pacific Resources, Shane Lundgren and Jim Keene. And you have two folks also, and Ms. Squires.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Hasina Squires. I'm here today on behalf of Dutch Pacific Resources. There are two parcels of property within the three-mile radius of the Metolius Basin that have been cited for destination resort approval by Jefferson County. My client owns one of those parcels. It's the smaller parcel, 627 acres. With me today is Shane Lundgren, a fourth-generation Camp Shermanite, so I'm sure Senator Walker, Mr. Lundgren, can provide you with a great deal of family history about the Metolius Basin and the current state of affairs. To my right is Jim Keene, who is the managing director of Bridgespan Capital, a private real estate and asset-backed finance fund. For fun, Jim likes to hike. I can barely get myself to the gym every day or once a week. Jim, though, is an avid outdoorsman and in 1999 hiked the Pacific Crest Trail from Mexico to Canada. So he's an avid outdoorsman. Also with our team today is David Newton, our water consultant, and also Steve Pfeiffer, former chair of LCDC and our land use attorney. I'd just like to make a couple of comments. My written testimony just provides a brief outline of the destination resort statute, the history behind it, and some information and corresponding statutes that accompany my testimony. Senator Westland indicated that this bill is about place. Absolutely, it's about place. We would submit to you that it is also about what is proposed to be on the place. So with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Lundgren.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Shane Lundgren. For the record, I'm from Camp Sherman, currently reside in Camp Sherman. My great-grandfather was John Zentbauer, founder of Janssen. He came to Camp Sherman in the early 1900s to fish at the Heising Resort, which then became the Circle M. And in 1919, he purchased this place on the river, which consists of about 160 acres, just below the Gorge Campground. Our family has been fortunate enough to quietly do nothing but live on and enjoy this landscape for four generations. We own the house on the Metolius Resort, which has hosted Kirk, not Michael Douglas, Hemingway, and recently the Crown Prince of the Dutch royal family. Although we have the rights to pursue high-density development as a resort on this property, we've never taken this opportunity, and we're coming up on 100 years of stewardship. The Johnson family also came to Central Oregon in the early 1900s, and we've always worked closely with both Sam, Becky, and now Betsy to protect the area. The founder of the Friends of the Metolius, Tony Foster, lived on our property until her recent and sudden death from cancer. We provided a significant part of the private funding for the community, the school, and have supported and funded the Wild and Scenic River Initiative and also Friends of the Metolius. Today we are both hopeful as well as frustrated with the process. In 2003, the 627 acres in discussion came on the market, and I had the good fortune to partner with James Keene on its purchase. Aside from being a kindred spirit, Jim is an avid outdoorsman and visionary, new-thinking, scientifically-minded environmentalist, in my opinion. We see a lot of negative comments. You'll hear a lot of them today, mostly coming from people who've lived in this area for 20 years or less, offering a rigid and worn scenario without factual basis. You attempt to appeal to emotions and without observing the facts and the process of intelligent dialogue. I think what lies before us today is an historic opportunity in a state known for historic land use policy. Oregon has been a trendsetter since the 1970s. The opportunity to create a low-impact ecological center for exploration that focuses on the education and enhancement of the Metolius area is unique and needs to be acted on. I believe this is a platform that offers stable funding and sustainability to maintain this area for future generations. It is also being gently guided by the longest-term stewards of the land, aside from the tribes, whom it is our intention to work closely with. In the interest of brevity and to continue, I'm going to introduce Jim Keene, my partner, to offer some facts on the state of the state.
Okay.
Madam Chair and committee, thank you for your time today. And I think right now we're being beset by the demons of presentation, so we're going to go back to the older form of paper. And
technology is wonderful when it works.
It is.
Isn't it?
So my history is I've had a very successful business career in life sciences and technology. I've founded companies that have created hundreds of jobs in the Oregon economy and have generated hundreds of millions of dollars of wealth all in Oregon, paid taxes, and generally made a pretty large contribution. I've authored a number of patents, and I think in general I like things that represent new ways of thinking and better ways of doing things. My personal history also is my family has been here since the 1830s. A family legend is that my great-great-grandmother, many times removed, was one of the first pioneer babies born in the Willamette Valley. We also founded the town of Tigard. I also have an outdoors life. As Hasina said, I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail in 1999, and it was the greatest experience of my life, but it was also the worst, because I could see the impact of federal policy on our forests, our parks. And the fact is that we're all guilty of abusing the wilderness because we all use it, and yet none of us pay our fair share to use it. And I think we are proposing something that will begin to redress this. Today you're going to hear voices from both sides of the debate, and actually we agree with a lot of the things that are being said. The problem is that the proposal, the bill as stands, doesn't fix what's wrong with the Metolius Basin. We don't think the Metolius is pristine like it once was. It's actually appalling. If you go to any campground any summer day, the numbers of people there, the overuse of the campgrounds, the disrespect shown for the environment by ATVers, and we think this bill locks this existing system in because it's 94% federal land up there. So what we're really talking about is that this is a palliative that doesn't fix the problems. From here, from us, you're going to hear a different voice. The only ones, we're the only ones who are proposing a coherent, integrated policy that, if implemented, is going to inject needed dollars and money into the basin's habitat. So if you go to page one of my presentation, you can actually see the Google map, which shows that this used to be one of the late 1800s land use policy of giving away checkerboard patterns of land. And this was fairly savagely clear-cut for many generations. Until in 2005, Shane and I bought the property. So I'm going to take you through on page two of this review, and I promise to be as brief as possible because I know a lot of people have things to say. But what, for the benefit of the audience, I would say that we're going to have a description of Metolius Basin issues as we've seen it. And I'll tell you in advance, we've looked at the websites of Friends of the Metolius, Deschutes Land Basin, USGS. I've read the 2001-73-page report that talks about groundwater, watershed, all those issues. And then we're going to tell you about why our resort's going to make a difference. So we all know this is located in Central Oregon. It's US 20, mile 89. It's about a half mile north of the Saddle Lake Excert. It's a busy highway, 10,000 cars a day on average, according to ODOT. And in high season, it's about 20,000. These are important numbers because at 10,000, you begin cutting animal migration across the highway. At 20,000, it's impossible. You've seen a 50% rise in traffic accidents in the last year because of this factor. If you go to slide five, it's a heavily used area. There's very little supervision. There's 15 campgrounds, 8 hiking trailheads, 2 equestrian trailheads, the Round Lake Christian Camp. It's surrounded by national forest, and you have literally hundreds of dwellings directly located on the river proper.
When you say there's little supervision, who are the campgrounds and trailheads managed by?
Well, it's kind of a dual use in that the Forest Service contracted out with the owner of Hoodoo Ski Resorts to do basic kind of campground management, but that's really just picking up trash. The Forest Service details rangers to circulate the campgrounds, but, you know, frankly, it's a couple people out of the Deschutes ranger station, mm-hmm. and it doesn't nearly begin to cope with the volume, especially in high season.
So does anyone go in and do trail repair or anything like that at any time?
The funds, one thing that's really interesting is the past 10 years, the federal government has actually cut the U.S. Forest Service budget on an annualized basis of over 5% per year, and last year they cut it by 11%. The thing that's making it worse is in the last 4 years, they have been spending an increasing portion of their funds on forest fighting. So last year, for the first time, they broke 10% of their total budget used for fighting fires. And if you talk to the Nature Conservancy or other knowledgeable insiders within the U.S. Forest Service, their opinion is that in the next 3 to 5 years, given the fire suppression tactics of the last 80 years, you're going to see 30 to 40% of that budget being devoted to firefighting. In fact, there's an internal joke that says we should be called the Forest Service. We should be called the U.S. Firefighting Service.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there's a number of issues. And again, we're not reinventing the wheel here. There's been excellent science done by Friends of Metolius, the university system, the U.S. Forest Service, USGS. Slide six actually gives you a tally of the 15 campgrounds in the Metolius Basin. There's 279 official sites that are permitted that you would pay, you reserve, you pay a nominal fee, not nearly the cost of what should be charged to use that. But the thing that happens is that could almost be compared to an airline hub. People touch down there with their motorized vehicles, they spread out, they use their ATVs, and they create probably an order of magnitude difference as far as unofficial campsites that are kind of a hub around each campground. And all these, by the way, were cited using traditional kind of U.S. Forest Service methodology of 40 or 50 years ago. So, unfortunately, they're within 150 feet of any watershed, both the Metolius as well as tributary creeks.
All right, Mr. Keene, I don't mean to hurry you along, but it's been about 13 minutes. I want you to get into your project a little bit more,
Thank
if you,
you
could.
So our project is to take our acreage and put an active community promoting nature-oriented lifestyle. The investment dollars for that, instead of using that for recreational assets, we would request to be able to use that to do habitat rehabilitation, watershed repair, traffic management, as well as by mitigation rights for water. We, in essence, would be like those roadside signs that adopt the environment. And sustainable tourism, we feel, would generate jobs and economic growth. For development, we follow a worldwide movement called the Natural Step. This would basically have zero energy use or neutral energy use houses that would be designed with solar roofs, et cetera, as well as neutral water. On slide 13, the build-out approach would be more European in style. We'd like to cluster the buildings versus the traditional American grid lots. We'd like to not have the McMansion in the wilderness effect. And we'd be focused on rock climbing, road and mountain biking, backcountry recreation, and in the winter, cross-country and backcountry skiing. So our water strategy, we project we'd use 40 acre feet a year, and that'd be less than 2 minutes a month of Metolian flow.
Repeat that one, please. That one's important.
Okay. That's how to get
I mean, it's all important, but I want you to go back to the water issue.
So a typical destination resort house uses 1,250 gallons a day of water. Mm-hmm. The typical Central Oregon house uses anywhere between 200 to 300 gallons a day. But that's an American consumption pattern. We're all pretty wasteful of water. And with sustainable communities that you see dozens of across the United States and Europe, they can get down to around 200 to 150. So we've taken the projection using the 300, the average, and we say that we're going to use 40 acre feet a year based on our water analysis.
Okay.
The other thing is that because we're not doing unnatural landscaping or golf courses, we think there are plenty of golf courses in Central Oregon. That also cuts water. And so if you take 40 acre feet a year, that's about 13 million gallons, which it represents about 22 minutes of flow per year from the Metolius. And the other point is that we'd have to buy this from an existing user anyway, according to the groundwater system. So it's not like we're withdrawing it and not putting it back or taking it, creating new water.
Okay.
We also think there's mitigation strategies. Camp Sherman, I think, could probably use with some conservation themselves. We can purchase and donate extra water rights, and we also think that there's a lack of data here where funding would provide monitoring and data collection. Clean watershed management, we would see using our money to rebuild hiking trails, mountain biking, equestrian trails, and we'd also provide private management and stewardship of the campgrounds. And in general, I'd say that this is an ideal site to do traffic management also, since it's so close to the highway. We feel that we could create more campsites and then pull some off the river. And then lastly, I'll talk about how we'd like to work with local organizations. Unfortunately, it's kind of a polarized debate, as has been alluded to previously, and it works both ways, actually. We've actually offered to work with local environmental groups, and we've been firmly rebuffed. Apparently, the existing model works very well. But the problem is most of these groups are undercapitalized, and they raise money through donations. There's a huge amount of private money that would be interested in funding resorts, but they're required to generate a profit to invest that money. So that money never gets used. And yet you could divert that money to be used for the habitat because people want to pay for that. Our proposal is not only use our upfront investment dollars required for recreation for the habitat as a one-time shot, but on a yearly basis, our homeowners' fees, a percentage of that would go to maintain the environment, and as well as there would be a property transaction tax that we would enact within our development that would go into a sinking fund to manage these resources. If you look at the budget of a typical environmental nonprofit, it works out to about $150,000 a year. Just the fees alone generated by homeowners' fees as well as transaction taxes would be $300,000 to $500,000 a year just in the Metolius Basin, which would make us probably either the first or second largest funder of habitat in the Metolius Basin, right behind the Forest Service.
Okay. It's quite a little project there. Any questions from the committee? right. Gentlemen, thank you. Thanks for your thoughtful presentation. I'm sorry our technology didn't work, but I'm glad you did provide these. And I think we had two folks left to testify, Steve Pfeiffer and Dave Newton from your side. We're going to take this committee to 10:15. That's as late as we can go because we have floor session. We will not be able to hear all the testimony, all the public testimony, but the rule in this capital, and I observe it in this committee, is that we take testimony from those who've come from more than 100 miles. So when we get done with the presentations, we'll start with those folks. Gentlemen, can you try to be brief, please?
Morning, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm David Newton. I'm a principal of Newton Consultants. My company's located in Suite 100, 521 Southwest 6th Avenue, Redmond, Oregon. I've been asked by Dutch Pacific to help them with how much water they need for this special resort and also consider sanitary wastewater disposal. This is another water resources mm-hmm. issue that we need to consider, and also stormwater. I mean, how can we manage those to protect the Metolius River? I'm a registered civil mechanical engineer in Oregon and an engineering geologist, and on top of that, a certified water right examiner. I've got, I don't know how many years, over 30, doing this kind of thing. My focus really is in Central Oregon, in water resources issues, water resources management, planning. And my role, I'm an engineer and a geologist, but, you know, most of my work anymore is facilitating different parties to find out how to solve these ever more complex water resources issues. Now, I've been working in that basin with the cities, all the cities, the irrigation districts, the Deschutes River Conservancy, and even with the Water Resources Department. I mean, you all have to come together and look at these issues and find ways to work them out, and we've been able to do that. So my testimony today regarding Senate Bill 30 is really, what is the feasibility to do the project that was presented? That's where I'm coming from. But from a water standpoint, we believe that a resort, as was presented, can be built in this Section 13 without harm to the special values of the Metolius River, including water quality and quantity. So I'm going to talk now. Let's talk about this from the standpoint of water resources and capacity of the resource to support this project, and then we'll talk about the sanitary wastewater, and then finalize it with stormwater.
That sounds like a very long testimony.
Well, I'll be quick.
So you're going to have to summarize that.
Number one on the water resources, Madam Chair, uniform river flows. We see uniform flows in the Metolius River throughout the seasons, relatively uniform compared to a lot of other rivers that spike in the summer and drop in the fall. The dominant source of river flow here is, like Mr. Light said, it's groundwater. The flows are small at the head. They decrease as you go in a downstream direction up to an average overall rate of about 1,350 cubic feet per second. Now, this is at the Grand View Gauge, which is downstream toward Lake Billy Chinook. The groundwater component of that flow was also evaluated by the USGS in the report that Mr. Light cited, and their estimation of average mean October flows in the Metolius at this Grand View gauge is about 1,220 to 1,300 cubic feet per second. So most of that's groundwater discharge. And on the back of this, there's two graphics I'll point out. One of them is a map of the Metolius watershed. You can see the site location on there, and you can see the Metolius River. The other graphic I'm going to talk about next, there's four stream flow graphs on there. In the upper left, you'll see the Metolius River. To its right, Lake Creek. Mm-hmm. And then the lower left, Jefferson Creek, and then the Whitewater River. Mm-hmm. Those graphs, when you look at those are flows over the course of that period of record. I think the Metolius is 1912 to 2006. And when you look at the graph, you see the big spikes sticking up there. Those are maximum flows at that particular time. And then when you look at the graph, it's horizontal all the way across. So what that says is flows now in the Metolius, the patterns are the same as they've been over that period of record. We don't see declines, long-term trends in flow decline. And I've heard comments about that. You know, the river's drying up. But when you look at the record, you don't see that. I put the tributaries in there, too, because they all show the same thing, that the patterns you see are consistent over the period of record. Right now, we're in a dry period. The far right end of the Metolius River graph, you can see it slipping down a little bit. But when you look back to the left at the rest of the record, there's other times the same event happened. But flows also have picked up at different times, depending on climatic cycles, wet and dry cycles.
You've got about one more minute.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
The proposed project use is low. We're talking a peak rate of use about 168 gallons a minute. Average use substantially less. We heard a number of about 40 acre feet. That's how much would actually be consumed, not released back into the system. The Metolius River over a year would discharge just under 1 million acre feet, and we're talking about around 40 that's consumed. So it's perspective here. You know, we're going to use some water, but the net impact, I mean, we can't see it. And we do have to work with the department on the mitigation, which Mr. Light said. From a sanitary wastewater point of view, there is technology being used in the Deschutes Basin, other resorts, Eagle Crest, Brasada. It's a membrane biological reactor technology. It's they're adding this, using it. It provides a very clean wastewater. And by using this, this is a perfect site to use that. We can protect the quality of the Metolius River. I've gotten into detail in my handout.
Okay, we can read that, Mr. Newton, and we're going to have to because I'm not going to have time for
it's
this.
Fine, Madam Chair.
I appreciate your coming over. Mr. Pfeiffer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. One very quick point, if you will.
Okay.
The committee. My name is Steve Pfeiffer. I'm a land use attorney with Perkins Coie. I've been involved in the land use regulatory process here in Oregon for many more years than I can imagine on all sides. And if I leave you with one point, it's to remember that what the destination resort statute allows and what Jefferson County has done and has not yet completed. It does not, and what they've done to date was create a map. It's a two-step process. They have designated two sites in the county per the statute, as five or six other counties in the state have elected to do under that statute, granted in the mid-'80s. They've mapped an area as eligible for an application for a destination resort. They have not approved a destination resort at either of the two sites so mapped, including our site. It does nothing but open the opportunity for an applicant to prepare an application which addresses all these and many, many more issues in great detail. The point I'd leave you with is Oregon, as you well know better than anybody, has a long history of land use regulation and protection, more so than any state in the country. And I work in states throughout the West, and I'm occasionally shocked at what happens in those states versus what happens in this state. If there is a state in this country which can address the extraordinary characteristics of the Metolius Basin in a way to try and find a balance between a project and still protecting the resource value, it's the state of Oregon and the planning process we've long had in place. If we were proposing this in any number of other states, which I won't mention, I would probably be on the side of many of the other people in this room who are opposed to a project and support this bill. That is not the history of this state. It has been played out over and over and over again by many projects which have been proposed and rejected over the years on sites like this and which are equally valuable for other reasons. The system is in place. We have honed it. Some would suggest we have over-honed it to the point where it fails. I happen to believe it works. I'm not in the camp that says the system is broken. And if, again, there was a state I was going to put my faith in terms of being able to entertain or reject a project for either making or not making the grade, it's this program. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Pfeiffer. Any questions? I appreciate the testimony from both of you. And Mr. Newton, did you provide copies of this?
Yes, I did.
We have all copies of this in our bias, so we can review that further. Thank you for your illustrative comments. All right, I need to move along. We are rapidly running out of time. The Colson Project developers, Rick Allen and Bruce Thorne. I'd like three people at a time, so if you have one other person to come with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Rick Allen, and these guys will answer questions if you have them.
They will. Oh, okay. Yeah, well, we have lots of answers as well as lots of questions.
So I'll move quickly through. I'm using the littler handout that you have, one with a spiral binder and the other one is Senate Bill 30.
We'll be getting it in a moment.
Okay. I attended all the hearings, the 10 or 12 hearings. I was a county commissioner for 8 years, however, was not a commissioner when
this happened. Jefferson County?
Yes, I've been there 38 years. Serve on the Deschutes River Conservancy Board of Directors originally. Original member asked to do that by the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs and have been there ever since. So the hearings were held. More than 500 people attended the hearings. They were held all over. Lots of comments. In the Camp Sherman area, originally, there were about five resort-eligible properties, and they were reduced down after the comments that were taken. And if you turn to the third page in your little handout, the smaller one, because should have got two of them, and I don't know if you got them yet, but the DLCD and their comments from John Jennings said, Jefferson County was more restrictive than state statutes. And as the gentleman who just spoke, mm-hmm. Oregon already has strict laws, and Jefferson County was more restrictive. If you look at the map, which I don't know that you have it, but...
is it in this book?
Well, it is somewhere in there, but this is the one that we were wanting to work off of so that
okay.
we could... Actually, if you look, I don't know what page, but she's handing out now. It's going to be page 4, and I think it's important to look at the map of what the bill has written.
Okay, so we are
yes,
in this
yes,
publication.
Go to page 4.
Okay. Well, it starts out with page 10.
Don't worry about page numbers, because I would go to the fourth page.
All right.
Because what I did is abbreviated it down for you.
I follow directions. So the fourth page looks like this. Are we on the same page?
Yes.
Okay, everyone?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. It's a huge, huge area. It goes into four counties, Linn County, I think Lane County, Deschutes County, and, of course, into the Warm Springs Indian Reservation. If you notice the far right side, it goes within about 2 miles of the city of Culver, about 3 or 4 miles from the city of Metolius, and about 6 or 7 miles from the city of Madras. It's within the Culver School District, within the Madras School District, as well as the Camp Sherman Black Butte School District. Covers Three Rivers Recreation Area, which has 640 lots. It's an approved subdivision that's been there for decades. Crooked River Ranch in the bottom, which is 2,600 lots. This, as written, a 3-mile radius of the basin is huge. And then when you get into the Madras area, Metolius, then you get into what someone mentioned earlier is the farm zone, and you have to then draw a 3-mile buffer around that. So in order to have a resort, you have to go clear off this map over to the right, and pretty soon you almost leave the county, because there's already so many rules that tell you where you can map a resort. And so when you add this, it intersects with the stuff down the middle because of the EFU farm zones, and then they have a 3-mile rule. So in effect, this bill eliminates destination resort mapping in Jefferson County. The law requires that you can only go back in every 30 months. If this bill passes, the county, this would wipe out the two places they did pick, which means they can't start the process again for another 30 months. It takes a year to do it, and so on. So I just wanted to make the point on the size and the scope of this thing and its
okay.
effect. The next one is just a quickie on the water. That is the flow. It's a permanent gauge Oregon Water Resources Department has on the Metolius. It shows it's a flat line. It goes up and down based on dry and wet years, but over the 40, 50 years, it has not changed. The next one is the Ponderosa property had filed for water permits nearly a year ago for some wells. And as a gentleman from OWRD mentioned, you have a zone of impact, and you'll see they have determined that the Ponderosa property is hydraulically connected to the Deschutes River, not the Metolius River. And that's from OWRD. And then the second letter will tell you the same thing. And our zone of impact, he mentioned the zone of impact. Our zone of impact, as determined by the state of Oregon, is the Deschutes River, not the Metolius River. Then you'll go to a map on the property located east of Green Ridge. And what you will see is there's actually a 2,000-foot elevation difference between the lower basin where the river is, and you shoot up 2,000 feet, and then it slopes toward Madras. And that's why the water flows toward the Deschutes, flows toward Lake Billy Chinook. And this Green Ridge line is like a basalt wall. And you'll notice every creek flows to the right or to the east, and they don't flow down. And we would have to mitigate in the Deschutes. The state's already ruled that. If we take water out of the ground, we're going to have to mitigate in the Deschutes River. Nothing here can make you mitigate in the Metolius, unless you change, I guess, state water rules or something. But, I mean, currently they have told us we have to mitigate in the Deschutes. And we actually have the same map that you have there, and it shows the arrows moving off into the distance. And the last one, just this property of the Ponderosa actually is in the Culver School District. I think that's important to remember. This is distant enough, the way the boundaries were drawn when they did school districts, that the benefit to of this project will ultimately be in the Culver School District, which is a few miles from Madras. So I guess we would end it there in order to save time. We feel the county did the process with good faith. We got into the process in good faith a year ago, went through it, followed state laws, did it all. It's now being appealed. There are several appellants. It will go through that process. Who knows what will happen? If you alter this a little bit, what do the appeals court do? Because you kind of got... There's a record they're dealing with, and the record was the record at the county hearings. So how does this process get in the middle of the Court of Appeals? Because they don't necessarily go away if you pass Senate Bill 30. The appeals may still stay, and there's people there with different reasons. So then how does this process get mixed into that? Deschutes County adds resorts often. And if the Metolius... You know, the Metolius area has a lot of people coming and too many, and I agree with Senator Westland in many of the comments, and actually Senator Johnson also. Then we need to look at the whole, you know, how many people should be in the Metolius Basin. But what this bill says is you can build a resort in Deschutes County and drive up to the Metolius. You can have sisters growing at double-digit numbers. But if you come out of a home that's been built in Jefferson County, there's no room for you over there. Because they're adding resorts in Deschutes County. There's two or three being proposed right now, besides the seven or eight they have. But Jefferson County, for some reason, is going to get banished to have a resort. So I say if the basin is too crowded, then let's look at the basin and let's look at crowding. But let's not just look at crowding from Jefferson County. Black Butte Ranch is in Deschutes County. It's 5 miles away. We are 10 miles by road to the bridge at Camp Sherman. It's almost as close to Sisters from our property as it is to Camp Sherman. So there's an inequity in this. It's not fair. Let the process play out. Oregon has a good land use system. And I think, you know, good things will happen.
Thank
Any
you.
Questions?
Mr. Allen, how big is the property development you have planned here?
The property?
Well, this resort development that you're planning, how many hundreds or thousands of acres are you using?
The Ponderosa is about 30,000 acres in size. What has been mapped, because when you do the mapping process, you had to take off sensitive game habitats and mm-hmm. other, there's a whole list of rules. And that left about 10,000 acres. In Jefferson County, there'll be about 11,000 acres mapped resort eligible. Deschutes County has 110,000 to 120,000 acres resort eligible. Because it's eligible doesn't mean it will be a resort, because it has that exhaustive next step, which is water, traffic, impacts, that will take another year or two, and public hearings.
Because you plan golf courses on this resort?
We don't know that yet.
Okay. Great. And could I have the two gentlemen next to you did not want to speak, but could you identify yourselves for the record, and then I'm going to ask it. Let them identify themselves, and then I'll let you ask a question.
I'm Bruce Thorne with Ponderosa Land and Cattle.
Okay.
I'm Dwayne Clark. I used to be the assistant watermaster for 28 years in this area. I did all the Deschutes, Crooked River, northern part of Klamath County, and Jefferson County.
And your name again, sir?
Dwayne Clark.
Okay, thank you.
And a lot of these measurements on these pages, I did a lot of these. Lake Creek I did from 1973. I regulated 40 gauging stations in the Deschutes Basin. And so.
Okay, terrific. Senator Westland has a question.
Thank you. Rick, I'm taking away from your testimony that, you know, if this line, this three-mile boundary was brought in a little bit and destination resorts, under your perspective, were allowed in Jefferson, now you're claiming they're not allowed, I would propose there's a lot of ground in Jefferson County east of Madras and south of Madras where resorts could be placed. But if the line was brought in a little bit, then that would be okay.
Well, it has to be brought in a whole lot in order to get ground that's resort eligible.
Resort eligible?
I mean, to be mapped. Lots of this land, you know, first of all, lots of it's federal. We're 50% federally owned. And so you'd have to go in and relook at all of this as to what's eligible with wildlife and all the different things. So, you know, a lot of this is already federally owned, so you'd have to, you know, and then you get into the farmland. So bringing in the line, unless you draw it to where either one or both of the resorts can be built, you know, that somehow you'd have to start the process all over, and current law doesn't allow that.
Yeah, Jefferson County is much more than 50%. Publicly owned, so
you're right.
I think it's about 80.
It's so, a bunch.
Yeah. So I mean, you're only 50. The and then also on your page 24, the OWR preliminary analysis. I see the preliminary analysis, and I would call the committee's attention to the letter in the bold type. This is not a permit and is their opinions are subject to change at the next phase or processing. So, I do think the hydrology is an important question in this debate. I believe the more important question is place. Anyway, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions of the committee? All right, gentlemen, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
We've got 5 more minutes of scheduled testifiers, and then we're opening up to public testimony. Jason Hale and Mike Morgan. And I'm going to have to ask that your testimony be extremely brief, about a minute. And if you have written testimony, you can provide that to us, and I'm sorry.
Thank you for your time, Chairperson Walker and members of the committee. I would just like to briefly state a few
your names
on behalf of the City of Madras and Jefferson County. My name is Jason Hale. I'm the mayor of Madras.
Welcome,
the boundary,
Mayor.
Thank you. The boundary is so extremely large, 3-mile watershed border comes just about 6 miles from the City of Madras urban growth boundary. If it were any larger, it would encompass the City of Madras as well as Culver and perhaps go into neighboring counties. Two, I am also troubled by our being in the administrative process of appeal to LUBA, and that this SB 30 would allow for a bypass of that process. We thank you for your careful consideration of this matter. I would like to give the rest of my time to my city administrator, Mike Morgan.
All right, thank you.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to acknowledge, correct me if I'm wrong, we are graced by the youngest mayor in Oregon. Is that correct?
Yes.
Well, actually, I think
the second.
You're the second youngest.
Union, Oregon has an 18-year-old mayor.
That's exactly right.
It's a tough one to beat.
It's nice to go to the bar with your mayor and have his ID checked.
Jason, you better start using a little Grecian formula. I mean, I can see it catching up on you. Yeah, it's coming.
Yeah, I was surprised that you. I thought, my goodness, he's young, or I'm getting old. But that we admire young people.
That will never happen, Madam.
Yeah, we admire young people who step up to the plate, and I have been following the career of the union mayor, and so it's a pleasure to meet the second.
Thank you very much. The pleasure is all mine.
This is Jason's first testimony before a state committee, and he told me he was really nervous, and I said, so am I, but I think he's doing great, and you guys are treating him well.
He did, and I hate to.
Nice to an old grizzled guy here, too.
Yeah.
Wait, Mike.
I'm going to speak on behalf of the city of Madras in opposition to Senate Bill 30, but with respect for the author and with great difficulty because
Mike
Morgan, city administrator, Madras, former county administrator, Jefferson County. Senator Westland once said, I've been there longer than dirt. I don't think that's quite fair, but I have been there for a while. That said, we do address this opposition with difficulty because we like Senator Ben Westland, and he is the author of this, and he has really been a great advocate for our community over the years. But we do think that this breaks a fundamental principle of fairness, and that is you don't change the rules in the middle of the game. And we're in the middle of this game, and we've got there through exhaustive process. Many of the people that have visited with you today as county administrator and director of the community development department, I saw regularly at hearings and various processes on land use appeals. So I'm familiar with them. I'm familiar with their arguments, some of them related to the Metolius. Again, we oppose the opposition for three reasons. The first I've stated. The second is the city of Madras represents 30% of the population of Jefferson County, and as a matter of policy, and formal position, they did have myself appear before the county commission during the adoption hearing process and speak in favor of this zoning ordinance that did finally, in Jefferson County, place a dot in a map for possible siting of a destination resort or two resorts. What hasn't been spoken to a lot, but that I want to speak to really quickly, is why a destination resort there is important to Madras.
Okay. I've given can you state, Mr. Morgan, mm-hmm. can you state that in 1 minute, and then we have your testimony, because...
In 1 minute.
And I'm sorry, but we've got 15 minutes. We have to close this hearing down, and I need to provide some time for the public to testify.
Okay.
So just give me your 1 minute snapshot. I really hate to do that to you, but I know you can do it.
Yes, ma'am. The 1 minute snapshot is about wealth transfer. Well, we have the lowest per capita income in the region. We have the highest needs imaginable based on the statistics generated by the state. I shared with you just one example, the issues related to prenatal care and the lack of general fund money that the county suffers under as a result of the way we tax property in the state of Oregon, and why we were, when I was there, and I believe are now, incredibly desperate to have the kind of development that has low demands, that creates high property tax value, that we can transfer to help our citizens. And that's my statement.
That was perfect.
Thank you.
That was perfect. And we do have your written testimony, and we will read it. I guarantee you that. And thank you both. And thank you for coming, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
All right. We've got 2 minutes for Holly Van Wert and Tom Norton, and then we're moving to the next set of people.
Holly had an appointment with the governor. She had to leave.
Okay.
I believe that's what she told me. Anyway, my name is Tom Norton, and I appreciate what you do and the opportunity to address you today. I'm apparently the only one here today without an active dog in this fight.
Well, then you're a perfect person we want to hear from.
Pretty transplant. That means I paid my own way over here. I own several thousand acres of range, and I think for that you just need to understand me to understand where I come from, so I'll take a moment. I own several thousand acres of range timber and farm ground in our county. Five creeks either head or spend their entirety on land I own. My living is completely from agriculture, specifically the cattle business. And then I own Norton Cattle Company and its related companies in their entirety because of my age and LLCs with my sons. Around Salem, I ran cattle in the state prison property just east of here for years. You drive north on Interstate 5, Brooks and Orpak Cannery. There's a couple thousand cattle there of mine. Have been there for several years, and the quality of water is improved every year in the groundwater system around that since we started doing that. My history goes back 60 years in Jefferson County, where my mother, who is now 93 and still very informed, along with newly elected Commissioner Hatfield's father-in-law, 1 year her junior, served as commissioner, commissioners, judges, and other capacities for years in our county. I've served on our district school board for several years, served on environmental and continue to serve environmental, conservation, water, and food boards, and I've received ample recognition for this. I know the meaning of the hours and work people like you members commit. I've been blessed as only we in America can be, and Senator Wesson can attest to everything I just said. Today, agriculture alone cannot fund the services required by our counties to the extent it has in the past. Ours is a culturally diverse county. I found it very unique. In the last 8 years I was on the school board, all five of the school board members, and they changed some, but always all five of them received all their primary and secondary education in Jefferson County. Today, two of those were Native Americans, my friends, and excellent board members. One of the Native Americans today is president of the Oregon School Boards Association. The other one is chair of the Schutz River Conservancy, with which I'm a board member, along with Gregory McLaren behind me here. And these are the people that built and nurtured Jefferson County. Today I oppose Senate Bill 30, and that it overturns these same local people's hard work and best efforts to keep our county's future viable. I'm left wondering today, Senator Walker, in Lane County, where I'm involved with several of your farmers, or you, Senator Cruz, in Douglas County, where I pastured cattle for 25 years in Glide, Happy Valley, Round Prairie, Yoncall, and the Metz Hill areas. Are you, Senator Metzger, of Hood River, where the only cattle I have are three head that escaped a very unfortunate truck wreck I had there in 2005.
We appreciate the contribution.
Senator Morrison, Lee County, where I've also involved. And,
he's done his homework.
And lastly, you, Senator Westland, of Deschutes County, where, as you know, I'm very involved. As I close, I still wonder, and I wonder if any of you would feel any different than I do today if Mount Huir, Harney, Klamath, Coos, Curry, or even Wheeler County had the political wherewithal to impose upon any of your respective areas what Senate Bill 30 imposes on our county's best efforts to sound local planning. I also, in closing, Senator Westland, I ask you to recall when you first dipped your toes in the political waters, which resulted in you very ably representing Jefferson County. And I ask you to recall your help that Mike Morgan led to as your support in our struggles as we together mold the county into what it is today. And as I wonder in closing, I think of how you would have received Senate Bill 30 back then. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Norton. I've always admired ranchers. They speak with a lot of common sense and a sense of humor and hard work. Thank you for coming all the way over here and expressing
any
your
questions?
Opinion.
Thank you.
And all right.
Find those cattle that got loose up there.
Yeah. All right.
I got my Brandon iron. I'm after them.
I'm going to start down the list with over 100 miles. We've got 7 minutes of committee left. If you don't know the people you're coming up with, you're going to know them now. Eric, boy, I can't read that. Kowalker, somebody from Central Oregon Land Watch. Okay, whatever that is. All right. Dick Kellogg and Gregory McLaren. Okay, you've all got about 1 minute. If you have written testimony, provide it to us, and then we're going to skip down the line.
Good morning, Senator.
Come on up. Just start in.
You are? My name is Eric Kanzler.
Kanzler?
Kanzler, yes.
Okay.
And I'm the executive director of Central Oregon Land Watch. We're a nonprofit land use advocacy group based in Bend, and I would simply like to say that we express our strong support for Senate Bill 30, and I'd like to give the rest of the time to some of the citizens who drove a very long distance this morning to be here.
Okay. Great, thank you. You've provided us with written testimony?
Yes.
Terrific, thank you. Sir?
I'm Dick Kellogg, and in respect to the time, it looks like we have six more minutes for testimony, and we're just getting into the testimony.
Of a lot of people,
I would like
yeah.
to defer my time to Gregory McClellan.
All right.
And I'll leave my written testimony.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for traveling all the way over here.
Madam Chair Walker, members of the committee, Rick Metzger, good to see you. I'm president of the board of Friends of the Metolius, and I can give you all sorts
of... And your name?
Oh, Gregory McLaren.
All right, Mr. McLaren, thank you for being president of the board and being at our committee.
I've worked and lived in Central Oregon professionally as a forester and public involvement specialist for the U.S. Forest Service and other entities for the last 30-some-odd years. My testimony has been submitted. I'll also refer you to additional written and other materials that we provided, the Bulletin guest editorial regarding Representative Dahlem's withdrawal of his co-sponsorship, a history of the area of the Metolius, and Forest Service plans dating back to 1990 for the Metolius Conservation Area. The Oregonian article on fire effects of siting urban developments within national forest boundaries. These two proposals are totally surrounded by national forest lands and are entirely within the national forest boundaries set up by the U.S. Congress through Teddy Roosevelt and other actions. And a report on wastewater disposal in Metolius River Basin that's been provided to you. And a CD-DVD that should give you some a little bit more intimate familiarity with what the basin is like and why it's special. I'll just draw a couple of excerpts from my written provided materials. There are lots of facts of debate. Senator Westland referenced those, Madam Chair, such things about economic benefits for the county, schools, service workers, affordable housing, impacts on roads, how many more Conflagration Act declarations by this and future governors will ensue from urban developments being placed upon lands totally surrounded by national forests. The history of the Metolius River Basin, as I mentioned, this is totally surrounded by national forest lands. It has a part of the National Wilderness Preservation System, the Mount Jefferson Wilderness. It's a wild and scenic river under the U.S. Congressional Act. It's a state scenic waterway by act of your predecessors. Some of the best bull trout in the entire western habitat for bull trout, a threatened species. In 2009, Chinook and sockeye salmon species will be reintroduced under a cooperative effort of PGE, the Confederated Tribes, and other entities, both federal, public, and private. Representative Dahlem asserts that it's not just, I'm referring to Senate Bill 30, it's not equitable and it foils due process. I disagree strongly, and the facts support my rebuttal. It is just because the county's own process heard hundreds of people say no destination resort except for the two proponent developers who only owned the land for less than 10 years. Senate Bill 30 is equitable because it supports societal access to and protection for the basin, while destination resorts will see only a few people and families on their properties, those that can afford it. Finally, due process is not preempted. Hundreds of people told Jefferson County no destination resorts, in addition to the 15,000 comments received by the Forest Service in 1990 who said, protect the Metolius Basin. Then Governor Goldschmidt and his National Forest Planning Task Force agreed that the Metolius Basin was special, unique, and for all generations in the future, and hence encouraged the creation of the Metolius Conservation Area.
Sir, you don't have to hold your microphone so close. In fact, that's actually bad.
Thank you.
You're vibrating. Thank you. Your voice is vibrating. Let's
President
put it that way.
Good vibration is not.
Good vibration.
Senate Bill 30 corrects a grievous error.
It looks beyond economic needs, which I agree Jefferson County has. So does Sherman County. So does Morrow County. So does Coos County. And says there is a higher value. The Oregonian recently asked the question, scenic wonder or county cash cow? They should have stated Metolius River wonder and treasure today and any day over a single county's cash cow. There is precedence for supposed preemption of due process. The U.S. Congress exercised it when it established the Columbia Gorge National Scenic Area against the wishes of some counties. The U.S. Congress did so when it established Canyonlands National Park against the wishes of counties in Utah and, some would say, the state of Utah. And in our own state, there were those who said, don't protect the Oregon coast. Yet we did. You did, your predecessors. And we have the most accessible coastline of any state in America. That greater societal value is what Senate Bill 30 does. We urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, all of you. Thank you for deferring your time.
One final point in regards to the last mention of the Columbia River Gorge. The same section of Oregon Revised Statutes that Senate Bill 30 would propose to amend already excludes the Columbia River Gorge from destination resort siting, so there is precedent. This is not a novel idea that's been brought before us.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
Madam.
I'm sorry we didn't get to everyone else. We did get your CD, sir. Thank you.
Okay, you got it. All right.
We're not going to be able to hear any more testimony today. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take my weekend and review all the materials, watch the CD. Senator Westland, you and I are going to chair a little work group. I'm going to take a look. I'm going to read this material, and Senator Westland and I are going to co-chair a work group on this issue. I think there are points to be made on both sides. I don't think this is a slam dunk yes or no. And I think I need to have some conversations with my committee. And if any of you did not get to testify today or bring written testimony, please submit it to the committee administrator so that we can have a chance to read that. And this bill will come back at a later date.
Madam Chair, how much time do we have to submit written testimony that would be considered?
You have as much time as you wish, sir. This until the 26th of April or before. I anticipate if this bill comes back, it will be towards the end of April. This committee has to shut down on the 26th of April for all Senate bills. We will stay open for House bills only after that. So that will be your opportunity to submit written testimony. And, sir, I have to ask your name for the record.
Mark Dorman, I'm sorry.
All right. Thank you. One other question from the audience.
Madam Chair, Paul Dewey, would there be another opportunity for people to testify? A lot of us came over 100 miles.
I know you did, sir, and I suspect that we will have another public hearing at a later date, before the 26th of April, okay? And I apologize if you came all this way and you didn't get a chance to testify, but again, you can do that by written testimony. Thank you. We're closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 30. We're adjourned.